Yep. Y'all know what time it is. Time for the Shaw's Law podcast. We are in season preview mode. Today we're talking Cleveland Cavaliers with the one and only Justin Matcham. You know who I am. I'm Rob Shaw, a.k.a. the Pod God, a.k.a. Harry Potter. And my mic wasn't plugged in for any of that.
Oh, man.
I'm sure they heard it, just not as crystal clear as it should be. I was editing, and then I needed to hear it, and the mic makes it so you can't play it back. All right. Your Cavs have all of a sudden become one of the young, exciting teams in the league. 22-50 last year for a 306 winning percentage. Off the rip, better or worse this year?
Can I say about the same as far as winning percentage? Obviously, they will win more games because they're going to be more games played. Yeah. I will say maybe slightly better, like just by a couple wins over the percentage of last year. But, looking at what this team did in the offseason, I think it's clear that they addressed some needs, but they also made it clear, I think, with the Larry Nance trade that they're not going all in right now, and nor should they be. Obviously, looking at the rest of the East, there have been so many teams that have really gone all in, and you already have the teams at the top, the Brooklyns, the Milwaukees. Miami has made moves to really, solidify themselves. Chicago, which was kind of a team, in that bottom tier last year, that seems to, again, to be going all in for it right now. We'll see what ends up happening with, Indiana. But, even with TJ Warren out, I think they've gotten a massive coaching upgrade that should help. Hopefully that they'll have other guys healthy. Charlotte, again, made steady moves to get better. Hopefully they'll be, looking at just a league in general, not necessarily from the Cavs perspective, but hopefully they'll have a healthy season with Gordon Hayward and LaMelo Ball. Really, I think the only other teams that you can look at in the East that, the Cavaliers, to be clear, I do think the Cavaliers are better now than they were last season. Like, I think they did make moves to improve their roster overall this offseason, adding Evan Mobley, adding Ricky Rubio, even if Larry Markkanen, which we can get into a little bit, isn't as good of a player as Larry Nance. I think he does fit better in this team as far as, just what they needed in floor spacing and shooting. But still, I think Detroit and Orlando are really the only two teams you can look at that they're kind of in that tier with it, and you can make an argument that they're better than. Other than that, I think a lot of teams in the East got better this year, so.
Do you want a second to talk about what Larry Nance meant to you as a Cav?
I'd love to. Just kind of, overall. Yeah.
Or a favorite Larry Nance story.
I don't know if I necessarily have one story in particular, but just, being able to come into Cleveland and wear his dad's number, I think is awesome. I remember the first couple of games he wore, I believe, 24. Because Larry Nance, senior's number 22 was retired, and they unretired it for him and allowed him to wear that again. So that was really, really cool. Obviously, just and that's just something on the court. Looking at everything he did off the court in Cleveland, this entire past year, giving exposure to small local businesses, putting up auctions for his jerseys and when he wasn't playing, teammates' jerseys and giving all of those, proceeds to these businesses, matching those donations or those, auctions and, making his own donations to these businesses, wearing, the apparel of them, just, every single game last season, helping a different business, in the area that has been struggling through this time. So just kind of shows, the amount that he really, really cared about the area and that this really is kind of home for him, which he'll tell you himself. I mean, this is where he grew up. This is where his family is. So just overall, it's not every day, especially in this market, that you get someone who truly, truly, truly embraces, the area and the city the way that he did. And I'm happy for him that he's in Portland. I think, he kind of wrote a piece after he was traded on Cleveland.com, just kind of talking about how, this trade was approved by him. He was looking forward to getting on a team where he could truly contend for in the playoffs, more so than he did last season with the Cavs and probably would this season with the Cavs. But Yeah, it seems just like an outstanding person, you know, was always on podcasts from, you know, local podcasts, the Chase Down, Chris Fedor's podcast, you know, just somebody who was willing to talk to seemingly anyone and, you know, really just embrace the city here. So on the court, terrific player, off the court, terrific person. And we were lucky to have him while we did. Happy that he was here and happy that he's doing well now.
The big additions for you guys are Evan Mobley and Lauri Markkanen. Is there anybody else you think is going to be a major impact player?
Definitely Ricky Rubio.
Oh, pretty Ricky. How could I forget?
Yeah.
All right. What do you think of the Markkanen? Not, I'm sorry, not the Markkanen, the Mobley Allen fit.
So, you know, first of all, I think you look at where the Cavs selected in the draft, third overall. It was clearly the correct pick at the time, and I think it still is. But, you know, there was never a doubt as to who they were going to take at that spot. I just think the talent and the upside was so, so, so clear. Even with Jared Allen in the fold, you were always going to select Mobley. It is a little bit interesting that they decided to extend Jared Allen for 5 years at $20 million a season. And it just shows that that the Cavaliers did commit to playing those two together, and obviously they believe in the fit. Personally, I think it can work. How well is it going to work? We'll see. But I think that Evan Mobley is going to be able to do enough around the basket. And I think even if this first year and maybe these first couple of years are really kind of clunky down low, just because neither of them have as much space as what might be ideal to operate, I think they will be able to make it work long term. I think Evan Mobley is someone who will, you know, want to be around the basket and who will get to the basket. But I also think a lot of what he does is operate around the elbows, around kind of the short corners, and even, you know, on the wings. So even if the shot isn't here right away, I think he's still going to be able to have enough space with Allen on the floor to do what he wants to do. It's not like he's somebody who's going to be, you know, on the block trying to post up in you know, meaningful games. So you look at that fact that, you know, I think Mobley isn't just a paint-oriented big. And you look at the fact that I do think he will be able to shoot at some point. The form is a little bit long, and with the long arms that he has, it never really looks super pretty at that size. But I think he will get to a point where he shoots it well enough. And I don't think it's ever going to become like a serious factor. But we've seen Jared Allen try to expand his game just a little bit, you know, in the past couple of years as well. Last year really kind of started taking some threes, just kind of messing around with it. And, you know, the results weren't fantastic, but they weren't terrible either. So even if that will never be either of their primary games, I think defensively, first of all, it's going to be terrific having two rim protectors behind, you know, Colin Sexton and Darius Garland. Obviously those two are still going to have issues on defense, and having two guys behind them who will be able to clean up a lot of mistakes is going to be great. And on offense, I think you can again look at Colin Sexton and Darius Garland as two guys who you can still kind of rely on to be the offensive engines for this team this year. And just kind of give Mobley, you know, his opportunities on the wings when it matters. You know, you can probably run some high low action with those two guys. You know, when Evan Mobley likes to operate on the elbows, you can have Jared Allen flash in and cut and maybe post up some. So yeah, it's not perfect. It's definitely not perfect, but I think at the end of the day, it is two really talented guys down there. And even if their weaknesses overlap a little bit, I think they're both talented enough, especially Mobley, to make it work anyway.
So my initial thought with the Mobley Allen pairing is Mobley body type wise reminds me a lot of LaMarcus Aldridge. And I do think the jumper is going to be semi-reliable, maybe not this year, like you said, but in the future, I do think that is where his bread is going to be buttered. And yeah. I think he's going to guard fours and threes in space very well, actually. Mm-hmm. I think Miami, Chris Bosh is going to be where he gets a lot of his film study from. Like, hey, this is how we'd like you to guard in space, and you'll have Allen back there as the last line of defense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. And I think, you know, both of them will be able to operate as kind of weak side rim protectors when, you know, maybe Allen gets brought out to the 3-point line as well. And that's why it's so beautiful to have both of those guys. But looking at the LaMarcus, maybe play style ish, as far as just, you know, the ways that they'll get shots off in the mid range. I do think LaMarcus has always been able to use his body a little bit better than I, you know, expect Mobley ever to. I just don't think he's at a point yet where he can move guys on the block or even in kind of that mid-range area in the way that LaMarcus has. LaMarcus is just kind of thicker than Mobley is. But yeah, I completely agree with you on the defensive end. And I kind of agree with having a center on the floor with Mobley to start the year. And at least probably the full year this year.
His frame is too small to bang as a full-time NBA center.
I don't think he's ready to guard centers yet.
I don't think it's good for his physical development at this point.
No. Yeah, I think, and if he does physically develop, you know, maybe he'll get to a point where he's, you know, decent at it. But I just don't think that's what he should be asked to do right now. So considering that, along with the fact that he, at least in summer league, showed, and obviously these are summer league guards, they're slower, they're not as skilled. But he was suffocating guys on the perimeter in summer league. And just with the length, summer league guards were kind of hopeless against him on the perimeter. And it was really kind of fun to watch. And obviously it's not going to be on the same degree in the NBA, but showed a clear capability to at least do that. And, you know, with the potential for more, obviously, like you said. So yeah, I think Mobley is going to be best used as kind of a 3-4 guarding guy, probably primarily, you know, fours and forwards. You're not going to, you know, obviously assign him to wings, especially not with a guy like Isaac Okoro on the team. But yeah, should definitely be fun. And I think defensively, the pairing is like pretty ideal for Evan Mobley.
All right. You brought up Isaac Okoro. What did you see from him last year that was promising?
That was promising. The defense obviously is very, very promising. Just the ability to guard anybody 1-3, the best player at all times. And, you know, had rookie mistakes, had times where he got into foul trouble. And obviously when you're playing your 17th NBA game and you're guarding the, you know, fourth best player in the league, you're going to have moments that maybe don't look as great. But overall, just is able to stay in front of anybody. Really, really, really strong, and he's only going to get stronger. So obviously, I mean, the defense is what we knew he was going to be good at. I think he projected the way that we all hoped that he would on that end. But the offense, well, not effective at all last year, did have some flashes as well. Obviously shot a very low percentage from three, but did show the ability to hit some, you know, catch and shoots on the wings, on the corners. And I think it was just good to see that he wasn't reluctant to take them as well. There were games where he would take as many as 11 threes. And even if he wasn't hitting, he kept firing. You know, the form I don't think is broken. It's a little bit clunky. It's a little bit mechanical, you know, kind of just has, I can't really do it right now, but it's not as smooth as maybe you'd like it to be.
It's not as smooth. It almost feels like it's in parts as opposed to one motion.
It is a little bit in parts. Yeah. But I also think some good things that we saw and saw a little bit of it in summer league too, obviously just with the lack of point guards on the summer league roster. And especially with the lack of point guards that this team had due to injuries at the end of last season, got to see Isaac with the ball in his hands a little bit and didn't look terrible. As the season progressed, I think he got considerably more comfortable with handling the ball. And it's still not something that he's great with. And I don't think he's shown any real ability to like kind of penetrate into the mid range to pull up there. But we did kind of see him take some pull up threes, some sidestep, step back threes, and like actually like hit a few of them. Like it didn't look like a terrible shot. There were times when, you know, he could pump fake on the 3-point line, take a couple steps to his left, and then, you know, pull up and hit it. Obviously showed the ability just to kind of muscle his way into the rim as well. Had some times where, you know, there were some really, really nice finishes around the rim, some creative finishes around the rim. You know, some other times where he was able to just kind of bully his way right there and blew a couple tires. Again, he's not expected to be polished in year one on that end. But overall, I just think the ability to put the ball on the floor some, as well as the ability to kind of create space around the 3-point line, if he is able to kind of just bring that percentage up, the ability to take, you know, 8 threes a game at his position, I think is huge. So even if he's not, you know, ever going to be a 37% 3-point shooter, if he can be a 35 or 34% 3-point shooter, even,
enough to keep the defense honest that they know
enough to shoot it. Enough to keep the defense honest and, you know, just doing it in, with volume to where, you know, he can then get to the rim, you know, and continue to finish there. Even if he doesn't ever really add kind of that mid-range game, which he didn't show, I think he may have taken two mid-range shots like off the dribble all of last season. Like it just didn't happen. But even without that, I think, you know, if you're able to just get off enough and hit them at, you know, a reasonable percentage from outside, again, like you said, that opens up the rest of his game to drive to the rim. And it's not like this is a guy who's going to be relied on heavily, heavily for offense anyway. Again, that was never, you know, the primary ask for him. So, you know, when you're not looking at an elite offensive player here, nobody ever thought that you would be. So I think what he showed last year was promising. We'll see how it develops this year. Again, like I said, in summer league, we continue to see him with the ball in his hands as a playmaker. You know, nothing incredible, but, you know, again, looks at least capable enough of, you know, bringing the ball up the floor, making the right passes. So I, and everything we've heard from about Okoro from, you know, any coaches who have talked, any players who have talked, is that he is the guy who could, you know, I mean, Larry Nance actually on a podcast labeled Isaac as the breakout Cavalier this year. So obviously somebody who works his tail off. So I'm excited to see exactly, you know, what developments he's made in this game over the offseason.
What's the plan for Kevin Love?
Oh man, the plan for Kevin Love.
Sound like a so at this point,
it's a stressful question, but at this point, I think Kevin Love is going to be on the roster to start the season. There doesn't seem to be any interest in a buyout on his side. And it never really seemed like there was, you know, I mean, I will say that the thing about a lot of people in the Cavaliers media sphere is that they kind of just like to, I will say it nicely, is turn their opinions into reports of as far as like what they think might happen. And it seems like that kind of happened a bit this offseason with Kevin Love. Same thing with some of the maybe Colin Sexton trade rumors, which again, maybe we can talk about a little bit later. But with Kevin Love, again, it doesn't really seem like he is interested in giving money back at this moment. And at this point in the year, I don't really see how anyone can blame him. First of all, you know, over the next 2 years, he has two years left on his contract totaling, you know, roughly $60 million. I'll ask you this question, Rob. So Kevin Love got hurt last preseason with a calf injury. He was expected to be out, 6 to 8 weeks, maybe. I think he was originally, because that was like in late December, mid-December, maybe the training camp happened. He was supposed to be back by like late January. Got to late January, he wasn't back. Got to like mid-February, wasn't back. Got to late February. I think, if I remember correctly, I think he first came back in late February for a moment. May have been March. Came back, wasn't able to, played like 3 games and realized like, I can't go anymore. So he was out again and then came back. And so finished out last season, except for like the last couple games, maybe. Didn't look like himself at all. Didn't look healthy. Didn't look like he could move at all. Was moving like he was 40 years old. Has all of that period of time from the offseason to the Olympics to continue to get healthy. Gets to the Olympics, gets on that Team USA roster, clearly is still not healthy. Isn't moving right again. Just doesn't look like he can stay in front of anybody. Doesn't look like he's comfortable on the floor. And obviously was feeling pain because he was the one who withdrew. So the question I have for you is, why would Kevin Love entertain giving money back right now when he doesn't even know if he's going to be healthy enough to get signed by another team?
He wouldn't. This is why NFL players get so jealous of NBA players. Guaranteed money. Mm-hmm. Why would I give back guaranteed money, especially like there's betting on yourself. And then there's, hey, the last two times I tried to go out there and play high, high level basketball, I didn't feel like me. No, he's got to keep that money until they trade him.
Yeah. So, and if they trade him, which again, we'll see if that's even possible. And if it's worth the cost, if it is possible, I think that the Kevin Love situation will play out into the regular season for the Cavs personally. I think we will get into the regular season where the Cavaliers will run out of power forward rotation. of Evan Mobley, Lauri Markkanen. I'm sure Dean Wade will get minutes. I'm sure Lamar Stevens will get his opportunities at some points. But either way, there are a lot of power forwards on this roster, and Kevin Love is one of them. And if he is healthy, he probably is not going to get as many minutes as he'd like. So my kind of gut feeling with it is if Kevin Love is healthy and he isn't in the role that he wants to be in, that's when we start seeing buyout possibilities be discussed, to where he doesn't, you know, he wants, if he's healthy, he's going to want to play. And there are going to be better opportunities for him to play on better teams with, you know, more minutes available to him. But if he's hurt, if he gets hurt again early in the year, if he's not healthy coming into training camp, there is no reason for him to give back any money. So yeah, we'll see. I think he's going to be here for a little while longer. And you know, maybe other injuries happen. Maybe, you know, maybe Lauri Markkanen gets hurt early in the year. You know, I'm not saying that's going to happen, not saying I expect that to happen, but maybe another injury to someone not named Kevin Love happens and that increases his role. Maybe he's happy at that point, playing more minutes. But another thing to remember with the Kevin Love situation is that this isn't like Andre Drummond, where Andre Drummond basically gave back the amount of money that he was going to make with the Lakers to leave the Cavaliers. The Cavaliers are going to ask Kevin Love to give back more money than that, because he's on the books for multiple years. Yeah, considerably more, because he's on the books for multiple years. So they're going to want him to, you know, give back an actual amount that will matter more so. We'll just have to see. I think he'll be here to start the year. If, again, I'm just repeating myself at this point, but if he's healthy, if he looks really, really like he can actually still play for a couple more years, or at least one more year, that's when I think buyout talks will start to kind of heat up, maybe 15 games into the season.
All right. Do you have any quick Lauri Markkanen thoughts? What do you think about his fit with this team? What do you think his role will be?
I originally thought when the trade was going to happen that that meant that Mobley was going to be brought along slowly and maybe brought off the bench. I've kind of turned around on that. I think everyone at this point expects Mobley to be the starting power forward, which means Lauri Markkanen is going to come off the bench. I mean, fit-wise, again, this team did not have a lot of spacing. And they added a floor spacer, which is going to be helpful. Another guy who can take threes with good volume is going to be able to play with either Evan Mobley or Jared Allen. Like, you can throw out lineups with any combinations of those two. I do think that we will see some experimentation, just because we've seen it in the past with JB Bickerstaff, you know, going with big, big lineups. I think we'll see some Lauri Markkanen at the three. I don't expect it to go well, and I don't expect it to be done very many times, but I'm fairly confident that it will be tried at least once, especially with the amount that they like to go to, like, Larry Nance at the three last year, or even, you know, playing Dean Wade at the three. And I think the problem with this team is that they do still have a very big hole at the small forward position behind Isaac Okoro. You know, guys will get their opportunities to play there. I think Jetty will get the first shot. Dylan Windler will get his opportunities. You know, Denzel Valentine will get a shot at that spot. But if none of those guys work out, which I don't know if any of them will, I think you are going to have to look again at guys like Dean Wade playing more minutes at the three, someone who I think is just more reliable. And maybe they do try out Lauri Markkanen there as well. I think defensively it'll be a disaster. And again, I don't expect him to stick with it long. But the interesting thing with Lauri Markkanen at this point is that even if this does work out and, like, Lauri Markkanen lives up to the contract that you paid him and, like, looks like a really, really good player, it's a situation where decisions are still going to have to be made if he works out. Because I think at this point it's a pretty safe bet that that Jared Allen is going to be, I think, at least a good starting center throughout the lifetime of his contract again, even if he doesn't quite live up to the number. But so say that Lauri Markkanen is good, and you still have those two here. You're still going to have to make a decision as to whether Jared Allen is going to be your starting center or whether you're going to put Mobley and Markkanen in the starting lineup, because you're not going to be able to start all three. If it doesn't work out, then you're just stuck with that big salary on your bench. So it's a calculated risk, obviously. I think there are situations to where if this does work out, you can use him as just a valuable trade chip, you know, 24, 25, 26 year old power forward who, you know, is just a capable shooter who is going to be under contract for multiple years. The last year is non-guaranteed or partially guaranteed rather as well. So that could be attractive to teams. And maybe that's where down the line you look at trading him, you know, as a sizable salary for a wing that, you know, can be helpful for this team. But I think it's, again, just realizing where this team is at in the pecking order of the East. It's a long-term move. If it works out, again, there are still questions that have to be answered. Is he your starting, you know, is he your long-term guy or is he just an attractive trade piece? Is Jared Allen potentially that trade piece? Has he worked, has he lived up to that contract? You know, so we'll see what ends up happening with him. I don't say that I expect him to be here for the lifetime of this contract, just because, again, that's a lot of money that you're committing to these kind of bigs, especially when a Sexton extension is likely going to kick in at some point. A Garland extension is going to kick in. A Mobley extension is going to kick in. Obviously, Jared Allen is under contract. So I don't think he's going to be able to stay here forever, at least not if Jared Allen is here. And we'll see if Evan Mobley is ready to play center. That's also going to factor into it. If he's never really physically developed to the point where he's able to play the five, then you're probably not going to start those two together. So I guess I get why they did it. I get the argument of Larry Nance was a better player on a better contract, but he's also older. And this team is making
their timeline more.
They're making a long-term move here. Yeah.
All right. F, Mary, kill. Sexton.
Okay.
Garland. And our boy. My boy. Maybe he's not your boy. Kevin Porter Jr.
Oh, man.
Like, I know who the Cavs killed. They killed in real time.
And you know what? I'm going to stick with them. And I'm going to say, can I go, I don't want to kill Kevin Porter. Can I go like
exile?
Can I go start bench and exile. So Kevin Porter,
whatever you want
to
do.
If I'm forced to, I will exile Kevin Porter again. It could work out. It's looking good in Houston. It looked good in Cleveland until it didn't. And I do think that the thing that kind of killed Cleveland with the Kevin Porter situation is just the fact that the pandemic happened right when it did, because the Cavaliers were keeping a close eye on Kevin Porter when he was with the team. They were keeping him around the team. They were just making sure that he wasn't doing anything that he wasn't supposed to be doing. And when everyone went home during COVID, they were not really able to keep an eye on him in the same way. And a lot of bad things happened during that time.
Yes. We don't need to rehash those.
Yeah.
So we're exiling KPJ.
Exiling KPJ.
Or who are we benching?
You know, right now I'm going to bench Darius. I think long-term I would keep Darius. Like if this was a question of like, who do I think is going to be the best player long-term? I think Darius Garland is going to end up as the better player, but I think Colin Sexton is the better player right now. So we'll bring Darius Garland off the bench, allow him to continue to develop, continue to grow. And I think the polish of Colin Sexton is going to be able to carry us in the starting lineup. So I'll go start Colin, bench Darius, and exile Kevin Porter Jr.
All right. Who are your projected starters this year?
Projected starters, I think, are going to be pretty similar to last year, just obviously with the addition of Evan Mobley. So it'll be Darius Garland, Colin Sexton, Isaac Okoro, Evan Mobley, and Jared Allen.
That's simple enough. And what is there a game you're dying to see, a game or two, or a team you can't wait to have pull up to the queue?
The Nets. I want to see Colin do it again.
Oh, man, what a game last year.
Yeah, it was. I mean, the game that they played near the end of the season was a little bit less pretty. But, yeah, I'm excited to see how that team plays against, you know, the Nets. I think that'll be a really, really fun one just to see if Colin can bring that same level of energy and that same type of performance. Obviously, it's not as exciting, but some of the other lottery guys going up against Cade, going up against Jalen Green, those matchups are always really, really fun, you know, matchups to look at. The Blazers and seeing Larry Nance come back to Cleveland, I think that'll be a cool moment. So, I mean, I'll watch all the games, but those are a couple that I may be especially excited about. What'd you say?
Does Larry Nance get a tribute video or a standing ovation in the crowd?
Both. I don't think there's a question there.
Okay, I wasn't sure about a tribute video.
The amount of guys that get tribute videos now, like Larry Nance will undoubtedly get a tribute video.
All right. Expectations for the season. What makes a good Cavs season?
Even if the pieces don't work together as a whole, just seeing them maybe work together well individually, if that makes sense. There are a lot of overlapping skill sets on this team, and I get that. But as I kind of said earlier, even if the Lauri Markkanen experiment doesn't really work because he doesn't really fit with those other two, even if he looks good at what he does, if you're able to, again, flip him for something else later on, then I think, you know, you can do that for something that makes more sense for this team. So really, I think that Colin Sexton and Darius Garland, I think we'll see if that ends up being able to work. I'm fairly confident that, you know, they'll be able to get further than maybe some people think that they'll be able to. And I think they've also done a really, really good job of building around them with the defensive pieces of Ricky Rubio, Isaac Okoro, Jared Allen, Evan Mobley around them. Like those types of long defenders are exactly what you need around those two guys. So I think they've done a decent job there. Yeah, I don't expect a good team. I expect probably bottom three in the East, but I think I would be okay with that if the individual pieces still look like they're taking legitimate steps forward.
All right, Justin, I appreciate your time as always. This was Justin Matcham of the Cavs Central podcast, and they can find that anywhere they find podcasts, right?
Yes, you can.
Are you pitching work anywhere else? Are you doing anything else that they should be on the lookout for?
Not really. You know, right now it's just kind of back into the school grind. I do some work for our basketball team here on campus, so staying busy with all of that. But yeah, you can find me on Twitter if you ever want to follow me at JustinMatch26. So I'm there. Might tweet something occasionally.
All right, Justin, thank you for your time. Thank you for your expertise. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been the Charles Law Podcast. And like that, we out.